HRN has a brand new look, but we're sharing the same delicious stories. Invest in the future of food radio by becoming a monthly sustaining member at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Hey there, and welcome to the Feed Feed podcast. I'm Alexa Santos, a food editor at the Feed Feed, the world's largest crowdsourced food publication and social media community, serving as your daily source for what to cook, bake, eat, and drink. Throughout season four of the Feed Feed podcast, we will be trying to help you solve that daily question that we're all faced with, which is, what's for dinner? Each week, we will be speaking with members of the hashtag Feed Feed community who are a constant source of ideas and inspiration and help us get dinner on the table every night. Today, I'm joined by Michael Silverstein, aka Chef Michael Keto on Instagram. Chef Michael is a chef, cookbook author, former MasterChef contestant, and social media personality. He's passionate about healthy food that tastes great and is also a big proponent of the ketogenic diet. Check him out on Instagram at chefmichael.keto and Chef Michael on YouTube. Welcome to the Feed Feed podcast, Michael. I'm very excited to have you.
Well, thank you. Hi, Alexa.
Hi. I hope I did a good job. We are ready.
Okay, good. I got my coffee. I'm ready to go.
Oh, perfect. So you're ready to get this thing rocking.
I'm ready to get this thing started. I actually just ate a fat ass salad. So I want to talk to you about, we need to discuss salads for a second. But
okay. Let's take a quick moment to talk about salads. What would you like to tell me about salads, Michael?
I'm literally just seeing the bowls next to me as we're discussing this, but I just I got back from the gym. I went really hard on this big ass bowl of salad. And I feel like this idea of salads are healthy, it goes way out the window with me when I pack it with blue cheese and dressing and all this stuff. So I it's on my mind that my salads, at least, are probably not healthy. So I'm just going to call it my big fat salad addiction.
Okay. So you're having a existential crisis about your salads. That's great. And that's a very keto problem, it sounds like, to be oh, I ate a salad, but it was covered in blue cheese. So, and you're going to get a lot of keto jokes from me during this. So I hope you are ready for that. Yes.
I expect at least as many keto jokes as the eggplant jokes that were flying around on our live recently.
Oh, you got it. Just buckle up. So you have your salad crisis. That's great. But I want to start by talking about kind of your earlier days. I want to hear about kind of food and your family and how you became the Chef Michael that you are today. So your childhood, what type of food were you eating? What was kind of what was the culinary vibe for you growing up?
We're digging in. I grew up in a Jewish house. So, that came with food with everything, right? Mm-hmm. Grandma's mom's, my dad cooked, everybody was just wait, you're feeling sad? We're going to feed you. You're feeling happy? Let's celebrate and eat. Everything was about food growing up. My mom is an amazing cook. And I started cooking with her really, really young. Really little, she would just let me do whatever I was capable of at that age. So I really got my first spark at a very young age, and just seeing food as really the expression of love. I know that's kind of cliche, but
that's cute though.
I mean, it's kind of true. It's just sort of been a part of my world. I always wanted to be working in the food industry. I've dreamed since I'm a little kid of owning a restaurant. Maybe one day that'll still come true. I'm kind of working towards that eventually, but I got my first job in an Italian restaurant at 13 years old. I wasn't even legally able to get a work permit. We begged the manager to pay me in cash. I guess kind of technically illegal, but so I would go in at 13 years old and watch the chefs, and I was kind of a intern, so I'd roll, this is a classic Italian restaurant where cloth napkins, the silverware was rolled up in them. And mm-hmm. So I would spend hours just polishing glass, or rolling napkins or watching the chefs. Like, they had this little like olive oil Parmesan like dip that would go with the free bread on the table. And so yes. I would just dose those out for all the servers. Like, I would just kind of like do whatever I could to learn, to watch. And that was sort of the moment, you know, pretty quickly at around 13 that I was like, this is my world. And I would say like, I've never really found anything that feels so much like home in regards to like my true passion. That being said, the restaurant industry is brutal. And at 25, I got burnt out. I left, I changed courses completely. I actually just like quit it all and got into real estate. I actually went to college for architecture randomly because I feel like food, I don't know, food isn't like, I don't know. I think I feel like there was all this pressure to kind of do something like with a classic professional vibe or whatever. So I went to school for architecture. I graduated, went back to working in restaurants. And then at 25, I was like, you know what? I'm going to like buy a house and renovate it myself. And that's what I did. I'd saved up for years. And at 25, I bought a house and over the next 2 years, like by hand, fixed it up, sold it, and like started a little real estate business, flipping houses and designing and renovating. Yeah, I don't actually talk about this very much, but for 5 years, I renovated houses. And then, oh gosh, I feel like I'm rambling now, but it's a weird kind of come around story. So, so here I am working in real estate, and through the stress of all that, I had gained a ton of weight. I was like almost 350 pounds. I was like way out of control. And I decided to like get healthy. I was finally like, you know what? I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to love myself. I'm going to make change. So I sort of found keto because I was like, man, this diet lets me like eat real food. It's not like I'm, you know, starving myself or cutting, like really counting calories or points or whatever. So I was like, okay, I'm going to give keto a try. And I actually like fell in love with it pretty quickly. And I'm not saying this as like an agenda. I'm just telling my truth. And I started an Instagram account just showing some of the keto food that I was creating that was sort of like chefy and elevated to a certain extent, even though it's just for myself at home. And I started a keto Instagram. And one day after about 6 months, and I had no intention of being an influencer or getting back into food, I literally get a phone call from an LA number, and it's one of Gordon Ramsay's producers. And they were like, we found you. Can you be in New York City in 2 days?
What?
We have staff there for the MasterChef auditions. You don't have to audition. Like, just come and meet with Gordon Ramsay's like culinary producers. Just bring a dish with you. So I had to get in my car in 2 days, drive with a cooler because they didn't have anything to cook on. It was at a hotel.
Wait, what? You had to travel with the dish?
Yes. This was the craziest shit. Can I cuss? I'm sorry. I should have asked that ahead.
They'll fix it in post.
Okay. I'll avoid it. I don't want the editors to hate me. Yes, they were like, look, it's at our producers are at this hotel in Times Square where we're not allowed to cook. There's no kitchen. So you have to cut, like, we don't care if it's cold. Bring it in Tupperware. We don't care. Once you get here, you can take it out of the Tupperware and put it on a plate and like pretend, we'll pretend like it's hot. And I was like,
wait,
guys,
what?
I live like 6 hours away by car. So I'm like, at this point, I'm like, what? I have 48 hours to, out of the air, plan and execute and drive to New York City.
And travel with a dish.
With a dish to cook for Gordon Ramsay's staff. Like, okay.
Oh my, I did not know this story. Oh my God, this is insane.
So I did. I made sous vide duck. I brought it out. I brought a plate with me, plated it up like in front of them. They were like, you have like 30 seconds. So I pulled out of the Tupperware and plated for us.
What?
And I
what
did.
Is this task?
It's so crazy. I know. I felt like the whole thing was like out of a weird, bizarre.
Yeah, you were just like being punked or something.
Yeah. And yeah, his like culinary director tasted it and literally looked at me and he said, yeah, you nailed it. We'll be in touch. And
what?
Like, next thing you know, I'm being flown to LA and I'm on set at MasterChef, and like my world kind of changed unexpectedly. So I actually lived in LA while we filmed season 10 of MasterChef. I had to walk away from my real estate business to like see if I could make this dream happen of being a TV chef. Stayed in LA, filmed MasterChef, came home with basically nothing because I had no job. I basically lost my business. and was like, well, here we go, full speed ahead. Let's give it a shot. So that was 2 years ago, almost exactly, like August of 19th. Yeah. So I basically came back from LA, like, with a whole new story to tell, and just flew with it. So yeah, I quit my job. I moved to Austin because I was like, well, I might as well make up, you know, go to, I don't know, get inspired, try something new, take a risk. So we, me and my fiance, we picked up, we moved to Austin. We like put our house on the market in Pittsburgh and literally picked up and moved to Austin with no plan. I had no idea how I was even going to survive. I just took a gamble on myself.
Wow, that is insane. I did not know that whole backstory. Thank you so much for
I think that was a lot longer of an answer than maybe either of us intended, but you asked.
Yeah, oh my God. So what a whirlwind and a roller coaster.
It taught me a lot, though, obviously, about myself, but I think it's also, just to tie this into somebody listening, like there's two things I want to say, and one is, you never really know who's watching in this social media world. You never really know what opportunities may lie out there if you just give it a shot. And like, I sort of thought the whole thing was a joke, but my life has changed. And now I'm an author. I'm here on the Feed podcast. In 2 years, my entire world changed because I took a risk. And so, yeah, I kind of want to say that to people listening, like, just put yourself out there. I know it's scary. I have friends all the time who are like, you know, they don't have a huge following on Instagram and they're so nervous because they feel like they'll never be able to compete with like big influencers or whatever. I'm like every influencer started with, you know, 50 followers. Like you have to just make content and run with it and see what happens. See if it connects with people. So yeah, just kind of wanted to leave that little nugget in there to take a risk.
We've got it all. We've got gripping tales, we've got life advice, we've got food inspiration, we've got everything here. Come your one-stop shop for everything you need, the Feed podcast with Chef Michael. I love that. No, that's such a good story, and it's like very, I mean, truly, you just put yourself out there and like not expecting anything, and then pretty much your entire world changed. So that's crazy stuff. So when you were in the restaurants, I assume you went to culinary school, like the whole nine yards there? No.
I am not a classically trained chef. Most of it started as self-taught or just from watching and learning in the restaurants. So, and I've worked on all ends. So I've worked behind the line. I've worked front of house. I've been a bartender. I've been a server. I managed a Cold Stone at one point in high school. Like I'm just obsessed with everything restaurant. And so, you know, and I think most people would be surprised to know that not many chefs that are working in kitchens went to culinary school. That's like one avenue. But there's a lot of ways to learn. And if you're passionate about cooking, like show up at a restaurant and just be like, I'll learn, like I'll cut onions all day. If that's what it takes, like, just give me a job, you know? Mm-hmm. I am definitely not a classically trained chef and have not gone to culinary school.
So there we go. Good to know. Glad we cleared the air on that. I just assumed you did. So when you were learning to cook from a pretty young age, you know, with your family, I know, you know, with the Jewish upbringing, I'm Jewish myself, so I totally get that vibe 100%. So were you like involved in the kitchen? Like what were some of the early things that you were kind of doing as a young Chef Michael, just in the kitchen with your family?
Yeah, that's great. I like anything and everything. My mom has always really brought cooking into like the daily activities. And I guess what I mean when I say that is like, it wasn't like one of those things where my mom was by herself cooking. Like, we were all always with her when she was cooking. I mean, same with my dad. My dad cooked dinners a lot. They both worked full time. So, like I still like miss my dad's spaghetti and stuff. So like, I don't mean to like center this on one member of the family, but, it's, you know, I think she would just let me participate as much as possible. And, she actually started collecting, like the family recipes that she would make. We've like, she collected recipes from like my grandmothers and kind of family, from extended family and aunts and cousins and stuff of hers. And she actually put together for me and my sisters, like a little like homemade cookbook of our family recipes to sort of preserve them. And I remember like in high school when she was doing that. And again, she's a school principal. So she was working like more than full time and still putting in all this like love into the cooking and into like developing this sort of record of all of our family recipes. And I think you see that at a young age and you absorb that understanding that like, this is important stuff. This is our history. You know, I think I absorbed pretty heavily how important food and recipes were, not just to like the moment, but sort of to like the whole story of our family.
Oh my God.
And so, yeah, like I still have, she actually made a volume 2 a few years later, but I still have both volumes of my mom's like homemade cookbook sitting next to me. And I think it's really special. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm like, I want one. I wish my mom did that. That is so cute. And so do you still like, do you cook from that, or do you still make things from it all the time?
Yeah, 100%. It's also really fun for me to see if like I could like keto-fy anything in there and stuff like that as well. Just kind of get inspired. But like it's so funny too when you read it. I don't know if like you have any family recipes or if you've experienced this, but when you look at like the way our grandmothers or something wrote recipes, it was like, it's not even, calling it a recipe is a stretch, because sometimes it's like, here's a list of ingredients and like mix together and cook until it's done, you know?
Yeah, literally. Like,
wait, hold on. So there's this really funny thing about, you know, about the way that family recipes that have been passed down are so much more about like just a feeling, a pinch of this, a feeling of when it's done. Whereas like when I write cookbooks or even recipes for my blog, you know, I have to be so descriptive and very precise. Like, are we rough chopping the onion? Are we mincing it? Are we dicing it?
Oh yeah. You know, it's a whole thing.
Are we sweating it till it's, you know, fully caramelized, or, you know, and none of that details in any of these family recipes. So it's funny because I've tried to recreate them and I'll cook it precisely to what these recipes say, but it never tastes exactly like my mom.
Right.
Recently she came to visit me here in Texas, and finally, after we all got vaccinated, she came to visit. I hadn't seen her in 2 years.
Oh.
And I was like, all right, we're going to make your chicken soup, because I have tried to make your chicken soup verbatim what this book says, but it's not right. So we sat here and I like watched her make her chicken soup like for like several hours and like learned it.
Did you write stuff down?
Yeah, I took a ton of notes right in the book. I hope actually one day to share that with people, because I think it's really special to me. And I think that's so interesting how, you know, to me, how food has been passed down in like pretty much any culture. Like, we're speaking of my mom's Jewish cultural background, but like any culture, I bet this is something we could relate to, like people from all over the world, that like the way that our mothers or fathers cooked was so much more about touch and feel. You know, they didn't have like fancy equipment. Like. Yeah. They didn't have like microplanes and, you know, immersion blenders and stuff. They like chopped it, you know? I think it's really cool, and to kind of like pass on that legacy through my recipes. It's very special to me. Yeah.
Oh, and so what are some of the items in this book? Like, what are some of the things you grew up eating? I mean, obviously we've got the chicken soup, but what else? What are some of the like quintessential items from your childhood?
Brisket.
Yes.
Hardcore. Quick answer right there. Brisket is a no-brainer for me. And that was sort of another situation, like the soup. Like, my mom has the recipe written, but I mean, it's good when I make it, but it's not her brisket.
Right.
my gosh, that's such a good question. I feel I feel on the spot. She has like all kinds of things in there. I mean, it's two volumes. Yeah, I'll have I'll have to think about that. Actually, yeah. It's sitting next to me. I could read a few things. It's literally sitting next to me. I wish. And like not planned. I had no idea this was going to come up.
It's with you at all times.
It's literally on my desk right now. I it was open to what is in quotes called the best hot fudge. Was open because I wanted to keto-fy that recently and make like a keto, like a sugar-free hot fudge based on my mom's. And it's five ingredients, sugar, cream, cocoa, butter, and vanilla.
Yum.
And that's it.
Sounds amazing.
So that was like literally open sitting on my desk. She has chocolate mousse, creme brulee.
Oh, so it's we've got sweet, we've got savory, we've got.
This is serious business. There's a whole Passover section. Oh my goodness. I'm serious. This is like real deal. It's like thicker than my cookbook. Like,
oh my God. She's not messing around.
No. And this is just volume one.
Wow.
Yeah. We're in appetizers, salad, back to the front, appetizers, salads, meats. No, it's like a legit cookbook.
I'm so proud of her for that.
I know. Me too.
That's so amazing. Oh, and what a story. And like, what a way to tie it all back into like what you're doing. And it really does seem like your mom was such an inspiration for you
kind of
pursuing so much of this. So this is, it's awesome. And so with your cooking style, how has it evolved over time? I assume you went from more kind of like family recipes to, I mean, then you were working in the restaurants and then you're the keto thing. So like, what is the culinary evolution of Chef Michael's cooking here?
Okay. So keto's new in my life. So that basically has only been like, I've been keto for 3 years. So I wouldn't have even known what that was before that. I was actually a vegetarian for 8 years before going keto. So evolution definitely got super into vegetarian food. And I'm just generally very inspired by like global food. So like traveling really inspires me and just in general, exploring kind of the vast world of food. So I try to like almost study different cuisines and then kind of really learn the history and really appreciate food from around the world. So yeah, we just made like Lebanese baba ganoush. I try to respect like the authenticity as much as possible and like learn from somebody native to that culture and try to really respect and appreciate and share as much as possible. So yeah, I think like kind of inspired by global food and then just sort of where that lands has shifted from like vegetarian to now kind of not the opposite, because keto is a lot more vegetables than I think people think of normally. But
there is a lot of meat and bacon.
There can be
dairy.
There can be. I don't love like bacon the way a lot of people do. So I don't know. That may upset people, but
I feel the same way. Honestly, like it's fine. I'm not like, I don't have anything against it, but I don't like go out of my way. I'm not like, oh, bacon. Like I love it so much.
Like I don't need bacon everything. Like I don't need bacon in my like Bloody Marys and stuff. There's like, a time and a place. There are some recipes there are things that I think genuinely, like I'd do like a, I don't know, you know, like I love making clam chowder with bacon in it. Like there's some places where I genuinely think it adds to the layers of flavor when you get the smoke and the savory and the kind of that sweet and salty smoky moment. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it needs to be like bacon wrapped everything.
Yeah. Agreed. And I don't think we need to like, you know, fangirl over bacon. Like I'll take bacon and everything. Like loving bacon's like a personality trait at this point. It's fine. So obviously you're living a keto lifestyle. You have, you know, a wide range of culinary experiences and your mom's cookbook and so many things. How are you approaching what's for dinner every night when you're cooking? You know, you're obviously living your keto lifestyle. So how are you kind of putting all your life experiences and everything together to basically make dinner for yourself and your fiance every night?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that, look, first of all, let me get my thoughts organized here for a second, because I think that there's, so I'm going to answer your question first. So what do we cook every night? I obviously, you know, I'm very busy, and my fiance is a nurse. So he is working like 60, like I swear to God, sometimes 80 hours a week. So there are some nights where it's like, you know, yeah, food is my world, but also like, let's just sear up some chicken thighs and like keep it moving. You know, like I don't need like a whole production every night. So I think I find, especially in the realm of like trying to stay healthy and maintain like the good feelings that I get from eating like whole foods, not junk and like pre-packaged stuff, is trying to keep it simple. So, you know, it might just be something as simple as like meatballs that I throw in the pressure cooker with, like I'll just roll some meatballs and throw it in a pressure cooker with like a jar of like nice marinara and call it a day. Last night, I just said, I literally seared up boneless chicken thighs right in the cast iron with some like just some seasoning, some sort of like fajita-y seasonings, like garlic, onion, stuff like that, and just seasoned it up, and then made kind of like little taco bowls with some queso fresco and avocado. Kind of called it a day. It took like 15 minutes, and it's like one of our go-tos is like making little like taco bowls with whatever meat we have. So yeah, I think day to day I try to just keep it simple, as you know, as needed. But then also, you know, obviously I have a serious passion for like throwing down in the kitchen. So there are nights when I go really hard.
What does going hard look like? Like, I want to know what you're like, what's like one of your pièce de résistance dishes coming out of the Chef Michael kitchen at home? Like, if you're trying to flex.
Yeah. I think seafood is sort of my, like, when I'm feeling feisty, I'm going towards seafood. Because to me, like, so I don't love frozen seafood generally. And so, you know, if I want to throw down, I'm going to go get some beautiful seafood, whatever that might be that like I see in the case that inspires me. I love like big, beautiful scallops. I love, anything sort of raw. My man is obsessed with ceviche. So like, if I just see something, a beautiful fish, I'll often make like a ceviche or an aguachile that just like on the fly with whatever we have in the house, and kind of like start with maybe like a raw or a cold seafood and then move into something a little bit more substantial. I think like just randomly the other day, this happened, and actually this was frozen, but I had ahi tuna and did like a really nice ahi tuna ceviche, kind of course one, and then into like butter poached lobster tail. It was just like the two of us, like I didn't even post it. It was just for us. And like, yeah, I think seafood is really special for me. I grew up in like in Maryland, like sort of in the DC area, and like crab and seafood was sort of like bay. Like we lived off, like seafood's such a big part of the culture in that part of the country. So seafood's definitely kind of my like true comfort. I think I even mentioned like clam chowder. Like I love seafood. So yeah, that would be like something I'd probably do, like kind of splurge on from my wallet, but also like just go hard on in the kitchen, even if it's just the two of us. It's a really beautiful seafood dinner.
Okay. Well, that's an amazing answer. I love seafood, and everything you've described sounds absolutely amazing. So, I mean, sign me up. Like, I'm coming over.
If we were closer, we could be having all the dinners.
I know. Don't start with me. Do not even start with me. So tell me about, I know you talked about your love of preparing seafood and kind of some easy things that you whip up, but ingredient wise, what are some things that you kind of always have on hand in the kitchen?
Ooh, fun. So that's a great question. I feel like sauces make a dish. Yes. So if you can like throw together a good sauce, you know, you can make a shoe tasty, you know, like, so often I have like a very stocked, I took a whole cabinet over, like, you know, my above cabinet, like over the countertop that would normally have like plates and stuff. And I took the shelves out, and it's just a giant like sauce repository. So everything that I could use. So like I'll just peruse like an Asian market or Middle Eastern market or Indian market, and I'll have like, you know, 6-7 different kinds of vinegars, some different chili oils, you know, your basics like soy sauce, sesame oil, you know, olive oils and things like that, and champagne vinegar and red wine vinegar, and like just kind of have like an assortment of things that could end up coming together to create something. And so that I think is kind of the, like my, I don't know if it's not a hack, because like obviously anybody who cooks probably has some version of this, but it's sort of my hack for like whatever I have in the fridge or the freezer, I can like make it sexy with like a luxurious, you know, buttery sauce or, you know, whatever. And then Ov's garlic is all, like, people who know me, I'm kind of shameless about this on my Instagram, but I love buying like big containers of pre-peeled garlic cloves. Yes. A lot of restaurants, that's like how they'll operate. Like, it, you know, to scale, sitting there peeling garlic cloves, you know, at the scale of like an Italian restaurant, it's going to go through garlic. Yeah. So, but you know, you could see them sometimes in Costco, but those big tubs of pre-peeled garlic.
Smart.
So it's kind of like, I kind of picked that and now I just don't peel garlic. And there's some purists who are going to hate that I said that. But the truth is like, you know, if I want like all those 6 to 8 cloves of garlic in a dish, like I'm not trying to sit there and peel all night.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I, what is the downside of not doing it yourself?
I mean, technically, you know, anything like that, you know, it was probably packaged a while back and like sealed. So it's not going to be as fresh or pungent.
Right.
That's undeniable. But it's not as bad as like jarred chopped garlic. Like,
oh,
that's,
of course. That's,
you know, like, I feel like at least it's acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't gone off the deep end yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, if you say it's okay to use, cause I kind of felt the same way where I was like, yeah, that's such a cop out to buy the pre-peeled. So, you know, I'm always, I mean, I don't cook on a large scale at all, so it's usually fine. But I mean, if you say it's okay, then maybe
I give you permission. Okay. You know, drop a comment if you hate what I'm saying. But yeah, I think getting the, like I said, I want to be clear. We're talking about like the whole cloves, the whole that are pre-peeled, cloves. Not yes. Like the pre-chopped stuff in the jar, because that's
like the minced garlic.
Not that. Avoid that if possible. I mean, I'm not judging you if you. Excuse me. If you rock with the pre-minced, I'm not judging you. Like, I respect anybody who takes the time to cook, whatever.
True.
But if you're going to like cut a step, you know, there's a little bit of a middle ground that I think is safe. And like little hack, Asian markets have the best prices on the pre-peeled garlic. So I get the jars from like the H Mart and stuff like that. I love H Mart. It's like this Korean market.
Well, now you know. Something to think about. Get your pre, and Chef Michael says it's okay. So pre-peeled garlic, we're doing it. It's 2021, guys. We're doing pre-peeled garlic now. Forget it. I mean, it would save a lot of time.
It does. Yeah.
So that's important. Yeah, so tell me, Chef Michael, who inspires you?
Oh, goodness. So you're killing it with the questions.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I hate to like kind of be cliche, but ever since watching in real life, Gordon, it kind of changed things for me a little bit. Cause I think I assumed that his persona, shall we say, was BS before I met him. I think a lot of people assume that the yelling and screaming he does and like his persona is more of a TV thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that there's not an element of that. Like at the end of the day, TV's TV.
Right.
But even when the cameras weren't rolling, his expectations for quality around the food that we were cooking was like there was no holding back. Like he expected everything that we did to be at the top level. Mm-hmm. And you know what I will say, when you watch cooking TV, like cooking reality competition shows, across the board, I'm not speaking about like MasterChef or Top Chef. I'm just saying across the board, a lot of times the editing shows like the mistakes, and it shows because that's like what's exciting. And that's what's like,
right.
you know, kind of the drama. That being said, what you may not be seeing is just how talented a lot of these people are.
Yeah.
And we worked for weeks learning and cooking and like rounds and rounds of auditions. It was really intense. It was kind of like a boot camp.
Oh, I didn't know they did that.
Yeah. And so it's basically a giant extended audition. So they send like a lot more people than ever make it on TV to LA. And then over the course of a few weeks, we compete against each other off camera. And so basically you just continue to get cut as you go. And then the best 20 in our season, some seasons are less, but the best 20 start the show and actually move into the cast. But yeah, long answer. Gordon Ramsay, I guess, is a big inspiration to me now because he is so good. Like, it's hard to explain until you see him actually cook in the kitchen. And the seamlessness of it, it's truly, like, I have never seen anything like it. And so that really pushes me. You think you know anything about food, and then you get in front of somebody like Gordon and you realize, like, no matter how good anybody thinks they are, So, he's also super nice. He's really cool. But, yeah, he definitely inspires me. I've always sort of idolized Kat Cora just because I think not only her cooking is amazing. I think that her kind of being one of the leaders in the chef and Food Network kind of world as being openly gay, really as a younger person and like getting into the food world as a younger person really inspired me that I maybe had a chance. And so like, I look up to her so much just as a chef and as a human. I think she's just a stellar person. So Kat Cora has been like my kind of idol chef for a very, very long time. Like pretty much like since high school in the days of like the original Iron Chef on TV.
Yes. Like the Japanese one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. I love that show so much.
Yeah.
It was inspired me to be into food in the first place is that show. It's so good.
Yeah. And I think Kat Cora is the first woman, as an Iron Chef America and the first, LGBT member, hall, I think, first out person, I think, on Food Network, if I'm not mistaken. There's other people who are like Ted Allen, who's the host of Chopped.
Because he was out because
he was on Queer Eye, but he wasn't like one of the chefs. You know, he was the host.
Right, that's true.
So yeah, big hearts to Kat. I just love her.
Yay! Well, those are very good answers. All right, we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors.
HRN is excited to unveil the new look of Food Radio. We have a new brand identity and a new website. Our site makes it easier than ever to discover new podcasts and to dig through our archive of over 15,000 episodes. It's been 11 years since HRN started broadcasting Food Radio, and we've made it this far thanks to the support of our global listening community. It's because of member donations that this show is on the air, along with 40 other weekly shows. Your contributions gave HRN the security we needed to stay on the airwaves during the pandemic and are allowing us to reopen our studio in Roberto's. Becoming a monthly sustaining member of HRN shows us how much Food Radio means to you. Become a monthly sustaining member at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
I have a game for you to play. All right. Are you ready? It's PG, so it's F, Marry, Kill, and it's going to be three food items that I believe are curated to you, but I tend to be surprised.
Oh, I can't wait. This is fun.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you have to pick what to do to these three food items. Okay, so we've got F, Marry, Kill, we've got garlic, chicken, and cheese.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Three hard, of right? my absolute favorites.
I did that on purpose.
Yeah. Jeez. Okay, I have to kill garlic. Not, wow. Not that I want to, but right off the bat, I have to kill garlic because I could live off of the other two. I cannot survive on garlic alone.
Okay.
I will, without a doubt, marry cheese.
Marry cheese.
It's my life. I have cheese in my veins. We started this conversation talking about blue cheese. We'll end it talking about cheese. Like, that is fine with me. Like, even though I feel more sexually attracted to cheese, like, it should be the F, but I need it for the rest of my life. I'm willing to settle down, put a ring on it, and, like, build a life together with cheese.
Okay. I get that. And I stand by that with you.
Yeah. So if we're going to put chicken in the F category, can I like maybe specify it as like fried chicken? Because that I would F all day.
Right. Of course. Like a sexy chicken.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's rock with that.
Yeah. Sexy chicken, not like, you know, grilled chicken breast. Like
exactly. Right. We're on the same page.
Okay. So like indulgent chicken is what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
So.
I'm thinking like greasy, crispy fried chicken. Like it could be plain. It could be like Korean spice. Like I don't care what in that cup, but it's got to be like
fried chicken.
Yeah. That's okay. That's my F.
Wow. Okay. Well, that is not what I saw coming, but I appreciate and respect all your decisions and will support you.
Can I, because now I'm super curious, not asking what you thought I was going to say, but what's, I need you to answer the same question.
With those same three?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess I'm pretty passionate about all three of those things, actually. I guess not as much the chicken, but.
So you're killing the chicken, just based on
No. I think I would marry garlic. Just because it's such a, like, solid thing in everything I eat and cook, like going out to restaurants, cooking, like it's just such a, I love garlicky flavor. And pretty much, I can't really think of a savory, I mean, obviously like sushi, it's not like really, doesn't really have a place in like a ton of like that type of food. But I feel like not having garlic flavor in food that I cook and went out to eat would be very sad for me. So I would keep that around forever. I guess I would kill chicken. I guess I would kill chicken just because I feel like I've always said if I had to make any type of dietary restriction, I guess I could do vegetarian. I wouldn't be happy about it, but I don't really eat meat during the day. I eat kind of lighter during the day, and like at night, obviously I eat, you know, full dinners.
Sure,
but
same.
I could do with that, you know, if I had to do like pescatarian, I could if I really wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, let's
be honest, chicken isn't the most exciting of the meat.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be annoying to not have it, but I could live.
And that's what I'm saying. Like for me, chicken had to be on that list, but it would have to be like, you know, greasy fried, like, you know.
Yeah. That's fair. So I'm marrying garlic, I'm killing chicken, and I'm effing cheese because it is a guilty pleasure and I love it. And it's probably my favorite out of the three for sure. So it's a bummer I can't keep it around forever. Like, I guess it's indulgent though. So it's, you know, it's got that little like scandalous element to it. So.
Oh, I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that's a solid answer.
Okay. Whew. Wow. Yeah. Honestly, you're the only person who's ever turned it back on me. And usually it's very curated to the guest. So it's very like, I don't really care that much about the three ingredients, but those three are actually really hard for me as well. So I appreciate that because it's all about thinking and making hard choices in this life of sin.
Well, and now you know how it feels to be on our end and be put on the spot.
Yeah,
so
it's tough. Those are three good ones. So we're really getting the gears turning on this fine day. I'm really glad we got that squared away. We can move forward with our life having that figured out. So that was important. Well, was there anything else important or burning that I did not ask you yet, my friend?
No, man, we went all the way back and all the way, you know, forward. I feel amazing. If, you know, like shameless plug, if anybody wants to learn more, like I think you mentioned at the beginning, you can find me on the gram, like all of us.
Chef Michael Dot Keto.
Yeah, I do have a cookbook sold worldwide, free shipping worldwide. You can find that information on my Instagram, or you can search for New Keto Cooking. It's like restaurant level keto food that, like, really it's designed for anybody. You don't have to be like a keto head to like enjoy. It's just good food, meat and greens and veggies and like beautiful sides. And yeah, it's really cool. It's not like a diet book. So New Keto Cooking is sold worldwide. And my podcast, The Talk with Chef Michael, is anywhere podcasts can be found, if you guys want to vibe with me in a different way.
So he's got all of the things, and I'll have to get my best friend, I think I told you, is keto. So I'm going to have to, whenever the next holiday or what something is, I'm going to have to give him your book because he would love that. So
I love it.
And I didn't even make too much fun of you for being keto. It was just so wholesome. I couldn't do it.
Well, you asked wholesome questions.
I know.
I mean, you can make fun of keto a little bit. Like, I can too. Like, it's not all. Some of the keto community, not the people, but like the way keto is tossed around is like this like fad diet thing. And you see like all this crappy like keto bars and cookies on like at like CVS and Walgreens now. Like, that's what I'm saying. I'm not like of the camp that keto is like this like solution to the world, but it did work for me. And I think that if people got educated around like what it actually is and isn't, and it's not like bacon dipped in mayo, it's actually like, you know, real food and vegetables. It's basically just cutting out potatoes and bread and sugar. And I don't think any of us would be hurt by taking a little bit of the sugar out of our life. So yeah, I'll leave it at that. But
I don't want to hear it. So
yeah. That's why, like, yeah, we're fine.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It has been an absolute delight and a pleasure to get to know you better and learn about your story and all the amazing things that make you you. So much appreciated.
Thank you. That was very sweet. I really enjoyed you in general. We've been having a lot of fun lately. So thanks for having me on the podcast.
Thank you so much for listening. To learn more about the food and drink discovery platform that is the FeedFeed, head to thefeedfeed.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at thefeedfeed. And don't forget to follow Michael on Instagram at chefmichael.keto. If you have a food story to tell or want us to interview a blogger, cookbook author, chef, or restaurateur who has helped you solve that what's for dinner question, we would love your suggestions. Just send us a DM on Instagram. See you next time.
The FeedFeed is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradio.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from our listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Thanks for listening.